There are many extant portraits and photographs of Robert Schumann. The earliest one I have come across dates from 1826, when Schumann was 16 years of age. A well-dressed young man about town, with a bright, cheeky face and unkempt hair, reflecting the relative prosperity of his family. The final one dates from 1853, some 3 years before his death. He looks like a charming and prosperous, maybe introspective businessman, and there is no sense of the tragic end that was to come some 3 years later. At 16, the year before he left school, he wrote, "What I really am, I do not know yet for certain myself. I think, nobody will deny me this, profound thinker I certainly am not. Whether I am a poet, for one can never become one, is something that posterity will have to decide. There is nothing else I can say about myself." Schumann was a romantic in the broadest sense of the term. He could equally have become a successful writer of prose or poetry as become a composer. He did write poetry from time to time. He called it music in disguise. Beneath his quiet exterior, he was passionate, proud, obstinate, determined, and hot-headed. Literature attracted him from childhood, and he read voraciously. As a teenager, most of his expressiveness went into the written word. His letters are full of romantic invention. This is part of a letter he wrote to a school friend on leaving school. "This is the time when a young man's soul glows with all things good and beautiful, and his ideals dwell with the gods of Greece in youth's bright Olympus. My friend, be my friend always, even though I should prove unworthy of your friendship. Hold these lines before me as a warning should I ever disgrace myself by not living up to what I have written here." Fairly passionate stuff for a 17-year-old. Writing would become a second career for him. In 1833, Schumann and a group of musician friends developed the idea of a newspaper about new music, and for 10 years he was the sole editor of the paper that was published twice weekly. As editor, he was involved in a constant, vast correspondence, and he was in touch with the musical establishment and new music from all over Europe. He had visions of becoming a virtuoso pianist, but he was not a musical genius. He was 20 before he received a serious course of music lessons from Friedrich Wieck, his future father-in-law. Throughout his life, he loved to go walking alone. When he was 15, he wrote, "I like it best to go for walks all by myself and to pour my heart out to nature." When he was in Heidelberg as a university student, he described how in the late afternoon he is off to the Rhine or my beloved mountains. In January 1848, there is an amusing note in his diary under the heading "Attempted Arrest of One Walking." Schumann, like many other 19th century people, regarded the growth of the railway network and its encroachment on the countryside with increasing irritation, and a fine had been imposed on him for trespassing on the railway embankment. Schumann was by nature not a very talkative person. Franz Brendel, a music historian, left this sketch. "He used to sit sideways at the table, resting his head on his hand, his eyes half closed as if he were daydreaming, and frequently brushing back his long hair which fell over his forehead. Then, when an interesting exchange of ideas began, he would spring to life and become loquacious, and, as it were, rejoin the outside world." The composer Ferdinand Hiller recorded in his memoirs, "Few of the artists I have known are more difficult to describe in their outer nature than Schumann. His manner in his dealings with people was the total opposite of that which characterizes his compositions. These are charged with all the emotions of his restless, agitated spirit, whereas in his social life, his real ideal is silence. He preferred companionable silence to any other kind of social interaction. When Wagner visited him in April 1842, he found Schumann's quietness disconcerting. He wrote, "Schumann is a highly gifted musician, but an impossible person. When I came over here from Paris, I visited Schumann, told him about my Parisian experiences, spoke about musical circumstances in France, then about those in Germany, talked about literature and politics. He, however, stayed as good as dumb for almost an hour. Of course, one cannot always speak alone, an impossible person. Schumann commented on Wagner's enormous gift of the gab. One cannot listen to him for long. He fell in love early and often. When he was aged 8, he was attracted to Emily Lorenz, who would later marry his brother Julius. When he was still a teenager, he wrote in his diary, "Girls are like new wine. When they are warm, they become lifeless and lose their glow. When they are cold..." Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, the rest of the diary entry is illegible. At university, there were other women. In the spring of 1829, he wrote, "A beautiful, happy, devoted feminine soul has ensnared mine." We don't know who it was. In May 1831, he came into contact with a woman he named Christel. From this liaison, he appears to have contracted the syphilis that would change his life and eventually kill him. He went back to her again in 1836. Yet, in April 1838, he wrote of the renewed relationship, "It is one of the most disgusting times of my life and made me feel thoroughly miserable." In 1833, he fell in love seriously for the first time and became engaged informally to Ernestine von Fricken, believing her to be the daughter of rich parents. Ernestine, however, was the illegitimate daughter of von Fricken's wife's sister, and von Fricken would neither make her his heir nor grant her a dowry when she married. Schumann now positively did not want to marry Ernestine, but behaved honourably by stating that he would go through with the wedding if she or her family insisted. Neither party insisted. However, Schumann knew that by ending the engagement because she was penniless, he had behaved pretty badly. The relationship between Robert Schumann and Clara Wieck, who would eventually become his wife, what he called a marriage of artists, is unique. Clara was an established concert pianist well known throughout Europe, whereas at the time of their marriage, Schumann was largely unknown even in Germany. In correspondence between Robert and Clara before they were able to marry, we get some flavour of the tensions that would arise between them as two artists. He wrote, "It all depends on how we set up housekeeping, and I will tell you at once my ideas about it. I should like best to keep my present independent position for a time, with a pretty house not far out of town. Then, with you beside me, I should work in bliss and peace. You would still practice your noble art, but less for the public and for the sake of gain than for the favoured few and for our own happiness. That is, if you are content." After their marriage, he wrote that it is absolutely necessary that we find ways of using and developing both of our talents side by side. And he worried that he hindered Clara in her practicing because she does not wish to disturb me while I am composing. Despite these expressions of concern, Schumann also believed that he could do nothing about it. He had to compose. When asked in 1846 as to why, in a portrait of the two of them, Clara is to the rear, Schumann said, "The creative artist takes precedence over the practicing one." His diaries relating to his periods in Leipzig and Heidelberg universities reveal him to be a normal university student. Life was a recurring merry-go-round of drinking, talking, going to concerts and staying up half the night. There were lively hangovers, musical hangovers, heavenly hangovers, and the worst hangover of my life, as if I had died. He also developed a passion for smoking cigars. While he drank regularly and at times heavily between the ages of 18 and 30, there is very little reference to drinking to excess in later years, except when Clara was away on concert tours. His smoking habit remained with him all his life. "Heavy cigars induce excitement and a poetic mood in me," he wrote. Death followed Robert. During his short lifetime, Schumann endured the deaths of both his parents, two uncles, his only sister, and his three brothers, as well as one of his own children. His sister Emily died when she was 28 and he was in his teens. Her death certificate says she suffered an attack of nerves. As a consequence, he carried with him for the rest of his life the terrifying fear of going mad himself. In October 1833, when he heard of the death of his sister-in-law Rosalie, he wrote, "The most fearful thought that ever a man can have suddenly came to me, the most fearful that heaven can use as a punishment, that of losing one's mind." Schumann's lively imagination made the thoughts of asylum unpleasant. When he was considering moving to Dusseldorf in 1849, he discovered from a guidebook of the city the fact that there were three nunneries and an asylum in the city. He wrote, "The former I could just about put up with, if need be, but reading about the latter was quite disagreeable to me." He went on, "I honestly have to take care to avoid all melancholy impressions of that kind. And as we musicians live, as you know we do, so often on sunny heights, then the misery of reality cuts all the deeper when it presents itself so nakedly to our gaze. Anyway, that is how I see myself in my very lively imagination." Against this background, it is easy to fall into the trap of assuming that he was inherently unstable for many years, simply because we know the tragic end of his story. Schumann composed with great intensity and speed. His first 23 opus numbers were for solo piano. In 1840, he turned to song, stimulated by his love of poetry and his love for Clara. He wrote over 130 songs in less than a year. Du Ring an meinem Finger from Frauenliebe und Leben, opus 42, is sung by Marie-Nicole Lemieux, with Daniel Blumenthal at the piano. 1841 was as astonishing for the orchestral genre as 1840 had been for the song. In 1842, he turned with another amazing burst of energy to the genre of chamber music, and in 1843 he tackled large-scale dramatic choral works. He managed to write the oratorio Paradise and the Peri between February and June 1843. Schumann conducted for the first time at the premiere of Paradise and the Peri with the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra. His beat turned out to be irregular. The leader of the orchestra reported to Mendelssohn that Schumann had had four full rehearsals. Even if he had had 10, it would not have gone better. In September 1850, he reluctantly took on the post of director of music in Dusseldorf. He was independent-minded and autocratic. He easily got people's backs up. He lacked judiciousness and an overall view. He was thus totally unequipped to deal with awkward prima donnas and equally troublesome large groups. To make matters worse, he spoke quietly and apparently without resonance, so that at rehearsals very few of the musicians could hear him. He was also short-sighted. He remarked himself that "I am so short-sighted that I can see not a musical note, not a musician." Consequently, his head stayed buried in the score, and he paid little attention to the musicians. During his stay at Dusseldorf, problems developed with his hearing that resulted in him not being able to distinguish the sounds of the different instruments. For much of his life, Schumann suffered panic attacks. In 1845, there is reference to problems with his hearing. He stated to his doctor, "I really have not been able to listen to music for quite some time. It cuts into my nerves as with knives." In 1846, there was a similar occurrence when he noted one evening strange distortions of the hearing. On this occasion, he became particularly frightened because every noise he heard turned into a musical sound. This would happen again in a most extreme form at the start of his final illness in 1854. On the 27th of February 1854, he threw himself from a bridge into the River Rhine. One cannot be certain that this was an attempted suicide. Rescued by boatmen and taken home, he asked to be taken to an asylum for the insane and remained there until his death on the 29th of July 1856.